From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made with you. You're in a room that you don't recognize, even though you live there. You see a bag that belongs to you and pick it up, but someone comes along and takes it, telling you it's not yours. Then you walk into another room and you see your sweater. You put it on, but someone comes up to you and says, it's not yours, and takes the sweater away. You're tired, so you walk into another room and see your comfortable chair. You sit down, and just as you're settling in, someone yells, get out of my room. You leave. You just want to go home. And when you try to push the door open to go outside, an alarm goes off. You beg someone to take you home, but that person says, this is your home. You live here now. In this scenario, you have Alzheimer's disease. This is what many people with Alzheimer's navigate every day. The disease causes short-term memory loss. People with Alzheimer's may not recognize their friends or their family, their surroundings, or themselves. In their minds, they may think they are at a different point in their lives. Perhaps they're 16 years old and in high school, or 30 years old and raising their children. About 6.5 million people in the United States, age 65 and older, live with Alzheimer's, and millions of others care for those individuals, either at home or in memory care facilities. While much of the focus of conversations about Alzheimer's focus right on the people living with the disease, well, we know that caregivers need support and understanding, too. They navigate isolation and grief and various day-to-day challenges. So how can families and caregivers and others create moments of joy for everyone? In her book, Creating Moments of Joy Along the Alzheimer's Journey, dementia care expert Jolene Brackey helps us understand how to do that. She's going to be in Rochester coming up as a guest of St. John's. But first, she's joining us on Connections, and I'd like to welcome our guest, Jolene Brackey, the author of Creating Moments of Joy Along the Alzheimer's Journey. Welcome. Thank you for being with us on the program today.
Thank you.
And welcome in studio. Mimi DeVinny is a dementia and quality of life specialist at St. John's. Mimi, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also, hello to Katie Allen, a division leader for caregiver services at Lifespan. Hello, Katie.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Barbara Smith is a resident caregiver at Briarwoods at St. John's. Barbara, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
There is an event coming up. It's How to Find Joy in Caregiving. Jolene Brackey coming to St. John's on Thursday, November 7th, 1:30 in the afternoon at the Winter Garden at Brickstone. It is a free event, but they ask you to register in advance because space will be limited. It is open to local caregivers. There's a book discussion, a Q&A, and Lifespan and St. John's are hosting a virtual book club, Reading for Moments of Joy, and a forum for professional caregivers the night before on November 6th. We're going to have all of that information in our show notes. So if you want to register, if you want to learn more about these events coming up, you can do that. And I know they would love for many people in our community to be part of this. But let me just start with Jolene and ask you to describe for listeners a little bit about yourself and why you wrote this book.
Well, I guess I started as an activity person in an Alzheimer's care community, and when I shared with others that I care for people with dementia, their reaction to me was usually, oh, Alzheimer's is such a terrible disease, and I didn't see that. I felt like they were funny when you least expected it. I felt like they were just humorous in a way that kind of truth tellers. So when they said something to me, I might want to consider it because they don't have the ability to go, should I say that? Because they pretty much say whatever they're thinking.
Mm. I want to ask our guests in studio a lot more as we go throughout the hour about the various themes because the book has plenty. We're going to be talking about early stages of the disease, communicating about Alzheimer's, memory itself, recognizing you or others that people maybe used to know and how to navigate that, and then disease progression, what is happening in the minds of people with Alzheimer's. So we're going to talk about all that with Jolene Brackey here. Let me just kind of go around the table, and I'll start with Katie Allen. Tell me about the value of a book like this, a resource like this, and the importance of having not only this knowledge but these conversations.
Sure. So at Lifespan, we provide services to family and friends who are caring for someone living with dementia. And I think what we hear from caregivers is they say, this is both the most challenging thing I've ever done, but also the most wonderful and best and loving thing I've ever done. And I think as we go through the day-to-day of any part of life, especially in caregiving, it's easy to get kind of in the routine of those challenges, the hard parts. And so books like this and conversations like this really remind people that this person that we're caring for is more than just a disease, and that we have the ability to kind of change our interactions with them. And I think Jolene's book really reminds us to think about moments and taking those moments as they come and really celebrating the joyful ones and trying to make them as joyful as we can for everyone.
That's well said. Mimi, do you want to add to that? What do you make of the books like this one and the importance of our community embracing the, I'll call it a challenge. I mean, it's a challenge of working through this because so many of us will be in this position.
Oh, I agree. The family members really enjoy this book, and it gives them a whole different perspective. I very much had the same experience as Jolene of saying I worked in a nursing home, and people say how depressing, and I'd say it's the most fun place I've ever been. But that's not the experience that they expect. So it does put them in a different mindset and help them to focus on the positive. And I've had family members say to me, this book was such a help to me, whether they were at home with their loved one or even after they came to live at St. John's.
Barbara, we'll talk a little bit more later in the hour specifically about your story, but will you just maybe introduce your story to listeners a little bit about yourself and, you know, your husband, Bill, and want to describe a little bit of that?
Sure. My husband was diagnosed with dementia in 2018, and so I've been caring for him since. It's been a gradually progressing kind of caring. Gets a little harder every day, changes from time to time. But we live at the Meadows in an independent apartment, which is wonderful for our situation because there are others around to socialize with, both for him and for myself. So that's been great.
I want to just touch on a couple of points that that you have brought up that about your situation with Bill. First of all, I was really moved by this idea that in some ways, you know, Bill is still alive, but in some ways you're mourning him. Tell me about that.
Oh, absolutely. And that's just about how it is. There are times when I'm feeling very sad and, you know, frustrated or whatever. There are times when we're laughing and enjoying each other's company. And, you know, we do have joyful moments, and it's great. I mean, this is the last part of our life together, so let's make the best of it.
You have said that there are times where you are certainly lonely because these moments of joy can happen, laughter can happen, but you do miss Bill being the Bill that you knew, right? The Bill that,
yes.
that you knew for so long.
It's kind of interesting because I can't say to him, what did you think about so-and-so when we went so-and-so a place last week? Because first of all, he doesn't remember when it was. Mm. And second of all, he really wants to please me and you know, say something good about it. So he tries to say, you know, oh, it was good. But it's always the same answer. It was good.
in some way, we were going to talk this hour about some of the evolution of this disease and some of the manifestations among people living with Alzheimer's. But, you know, the idea that sometimes the mind gets, I guess the description is a little younger. People who are 16 years old will say, you know, how was it last? Well, it was good. You get very little, right?
Yes.
And unfortunately, that's where you are with Bill. But you want to describe for listeners a little bit about how he is doing overall? How would you say, when people say, how's Bill doing? What do you say?
I say he's doing great because I really think he is. I do everything I can to help to make him feel safe and comfortable. And, you know, he gets nervous and scared sometimes for sure because, you know, something happens and he doesn't understand it. But I try to tell him, okay, we're a team. We're in this together. We'll work through it. And he can understand that for the moment. He doesn't remember that I told him that, you know, 5 minutes later, but so it all works out in the end.
Barbara, I mean, thank God for you. You know, just a really a remarkable person. And we're going to talk more with Barbara about communication, about the importance of maybe communicating as early as you can, making decisions that are in the best interest of the person living with Alzheimer's, but not waiting. And we'll talk about that. The challenge of communication. It's really all part of this book from Jolene Bracke. It's part of the experience. Jolene, how much does Barbara's story ring true to your own experience?
Absolutely. I was just going to say that when I wrote the book, it wasn't my parents and it definitely wasn't my spouse. And so I didn't have any expectation of who they should be. So I had the ability to just be silly and spontaneous and bring out the nonsensical conversations, which I enjoyed. But in the last 3 years, I've helped my parents, and I kept going, what did Jolene say in her book? Because I would correct my dad, because we want to correct the person that we know in the hopes that they'll get better. And that's where the struggle becomes, because ultimately your goal is to let them be as they are, because they don't know that they didn't, they don't remember.
Mm. Let's work through, I'm going to work through different sections and sort of advice, tips, lessons that Jolene delivers here that I think all of our guests can weigh in on. And I want to start with early stages of Alzheimer's. Jolene, you're right that the most difficult thing for the person with Alzheimer's and often their spouse can be that the spouse may think the person is doing forgetful things on purpose, or, you know, sort of is just not paying attention or caring. And that can cause resentment and frustration. Can you talk more about that, Jolene?
Yeah, the early stages are the most difficult, because they can have incredibly lucid moments where you're like, oh, they're doing great. And then the next minute you're like talking about your daughter who lives in Connecticut, and they're like, she doesn't live in Connecticut. She lives with us. And so it can flip throughout the day, which is very, you've got to fly by the seat of your pants. But it's also that tremendous adjustment for the person with dementia that they know that something's not quite right. And that's incredibly scary in the early stages.
Well, and this is where the communicating part comes in here, because it's a question of, how do you handle that information? Barbara, for you, were there any early moments of that sort of resentment or frustration that, you know, what's going on here? Why is this happening this way?
Yes, for sure. You know, and it was kind of like now, sometimes it was like that. Sometimes it was like, oh, I do know there's something going on. And I started asking the doctor and saying, you know, and he'd say, well, he seems okay. I mean, not literally in those words, but, you know, he was, you know, and I had to keep after that. And finally, he did see the changes that were happening.
Katie, what would you say about this early stage that can be so challenging?
Sure. I think there's many things. There's denial. There's anger, all of those sort of normal human emotions. I think that it's really what we say to folks is if you start to recognize things, either for yourself or for someone that you care about, is really becoming your own advocate with a physician, with a medical professional, to really begin to ask those questions. We also say sometime in this past year, we had a couple come in, and the husband was just diagnosed with frontotemporal dementia. And he said to his wife, we need to go to Lifespan. We need to get a plan in place now for you. That's so unusual. You know, we all, as human nature, we wait until it's crisis time to get help. And so I think all of us around the table, and Jolene, I think would agree that if we ourselves, or we know someone, we're caring for somebody who is in early stages of memory loss or a recent diagnosis, is to really connect early on with a professional, to really just to sit down and also to educate yourself about the disease. I think the early stages, as you said, we have people, you know, families who say, well, there's nothing wrong with my mom. You know, she's just making this up. She's just trying to frustrate me. Because there are lots of moments of lucidity. And then the next moment, someone doesn't remember where they are, or what you just talked about, or what they just agreed to do. I also think it's that grief and loss of mourning your own diagnosis or the diagnosis of someone you love is real. And it's a very different loss than when someone passes. They are right there with you, but they're not the same. As you said, it's not the same Bill that you had all those years before. It's not the same mom or dad. And so recognizing that, acknowledging that, and I definitely think getting support in whatever that method that works for you, whether it's a support group with the Alzheimer's Association, whether it is connecting with friends and family, even telling people. Alzheimer's disease comes with a little bit of a stigma, and we'd really love to change that. You know, we don't hesitate to say to someone in general, anymore, we don't hesitate to say, I have COVID. I had COVID. I mean, these are things, if we can begin talking about it and recognizing it, I think it then becomes a place where we can move forward to really understand and help each other and help ourselves.
Mimi, what do you want to add about that early stage?
I don't see the early stages often, you know, but yeah. By the time folks come to us, they're middle or later stages, except in my family. You know, I have seen it in my family. And because I'd seen it in the later stages, I think that made it a little bit easier for me than it did for, you know, maybe my other family members.
Well, listeners, if you want to share comments, questions, experiences, as we talked about Alzheimer's, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. The book that we're talking about is by Jolene Brackey, who is with us, Creating Moments of Joy Along the Alzheimer's Journey. And I want to talk about this delicate nature of communication. Jolene, you write, for example, tell the person one time the truth about what is happening. And if they don't bring it up, don't remind them. Why do you put it that way?
Simply because they don't know there's anything wrong with them. For the most part, they don't realize, they think you're crazy, right? And they're perfectly fine. And so henceforth, when we take them to the doctor, they can act perfectly great for 15 minutes. But as soon as you get them in the car, you know, where are we going? Why are we going? Where are we going? Why are we going? And so I think it's important to not focus on Alzheimer's. It doesn't help. It doesn't help. It doesn't even help to try to figure it out. It doesn't help to try to diagnose it. It doesn't help to try to, what can I do to make it better? When we spend our energy on the internet trying to get it, fix it, do something with it, that's where it's suffering. Starts. And so for me, it's basically, I want to remember the person, and yeah, they so happen to have Alzheimer's.
How do you feel about that one, Barbara?
Yes, I certainly agree. The one place where I would say that I would talk about it a little bit more is with friends or with people that you know, family, other family, because they need to know, you know, what's happening. And you know, the stigma, I know, is, you know, a problem for some people, but we got to change that, because it is what it is. And if you know, you can cooperate and provide joyful moments and move on.
Yeah.
So it's definitely important.
Has your husband, Bill, I mean, have you had moments where you have said to him or been tempted to say, hey, look, you have Alzheimer's. That's why you're not remembering this. Or did you decide early on, that's not getting me anywhere?
Sometimes we get to the point where I say, it's not your fault. Your brain is doing it. Kind of like, you know, I don't want you to think you decided that this was, you know, going to be difficult for you. But I want you to know that, yes, it's real that it's happening that way. So I kind of use that. I don't very often say Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And I don't all the time, many times, say brain. More often I just say, well, we'll work on that. We'll figure it out.
Does he ask about, like, why is this happening or why am I struggling?
He very much understands that he doesn't remember. And he very much wants to remember everything, so he keeps trying. I'll give you, or figure out something. I'll give you an example. He is a person who keeps track of the time. At his job, he always had appointments or whatever, and he'd have to be there at 10 o'clock. He wants to know when that is and how long and whatever. Well, now that's all gone. But he still wants to know. Okay, so he'd say, what time is it? How can I tell what time it is? And first I started saying, because he carries a phone, I started saying, it's on your phone. Look on your phone. But that was not working. Couldn't get it. Finally, he said, after trying to figure out what he was saying, I figured out he wanted a watch. He hasn't worn a watch for years, but for whatever reason, he thought he should have a watch. But the problem is he can't read the watch. So I got a watch, and he seems quite happy to have the watch on his hand. He often looks at it from the side or from the, upside down, and can't usually figure out what time it is. But then he'll ask me, and I'll tell him, and we just move on.
Okay. Katie, what do you want to add about that communication piece?
I think clearly communication and any relationship of our life is key. It's really important, for when we are caring for someone with memory loss, is to remember that we can't control anything about them. It is really, we can only control ourselves. So being comfortable with hearing the same story over and over and over. And that's okay. Being comfortable with entering, we talk a lot about entering the reality of the person with the disease, because it's not possible to bring someone with Alzheimer's disease into the reality that we are experiencing. So really, we talk about that sort of some people call it therapeutic fibbing, but therapeutic redirection of wherever they are, whatever they're saying is entering that. If they think that their daughter, who is 50 and has moved out many years ago, still lives at home and is coming home from school at 3, then that's okay. And I think it's that idea of meeting people where they are. And I think that goes for any part of life, but especially when it's someone with memory loss.
So one other point before I grab our first phone call. Katie, when you give that example, someone who has a 50-year-old daughter has moved out long ago, but their brain is back at a point where they're raising a younger daughter, and she's getting off the bus at 3. I think maybe my inclination would be to say, well, no, correct that. That will help them understand.
Right.
But that doesn't sound like that's correct.
I think it's human nature. We want to correct someone because we want them to be okay.
Right.
We
sure.
want them to get better.
Help them understand, yeah.
And someone with dementia can't logic through that. They are where they are. That is their reality. And so I think it is saying, sure, she'll be home at 3. Let's, go and have a cup of tea while we wait. In 10 minutes, they probably will
have
forgotten that
yeah,
conversation
sure.
and you can redirect. I think we often have that story of, my mom keeps asking about her mother. Well, her mother died 30 years ago, so I keep needing to tell her, no, your mom died. Mm. But for the person with dementia, they are reliving that death of their mom over and over each
Every time you remind them.
Oh. So then it's just saying, you know what, your mom isn't here right now. She'll be back a little later. And then moving on, I really think the key, and this is where I think joyful moments both for ourselves and for the person we're caring for, are really communicating in a way that that allows for their reality of the person with the disease. And in terms of communication, I think for ourselves as caregivers is finding those safe people that we can talk to about what we're experiencing so that we are not holding this all in ourselves.
Laura and Canandaigua, hang there for one more second. Jolene, can you say a little bit more about this notion of meeting them where they are and just embracing this idea that, yeah, your mom will be back soon to make dinner instead of your mom passed away many years ago?
Well, when you correct them and tell them that their mom is no longer living, how does that make them feel? That's always my go-to. How does it make them feel? What you're doing, how does it make them feel? What you say, how does it make them feel? So when you say they're no longer living, it makes them feel upset, anxious. Nobody said anything. Why didn't you tell me? So they're scared. And when they feel those things, how do they function? They can't. literally function feeling those things. And then when they can't function, who suffers? Everybody. And then the next question is, do they change? When you correct them, do they go, oh, yeah, that's right, my mom is no longer living, and they never ask you that question again? No, they ask that question in the next 5 minutes. So this is a disease. They're doing the best they can with the memories they have left.
And a further extension on that point of not correcting them, you say that you know, there may be a moment where they don't like you there. They don't want you there. They want you to leave. And your suggestion is, you know, not to just forcefully resist, but maybe go outside, literally change your clothes or appearance, and come back in and see what happens.
Yeah. And if they still think you did it or they're still mad at you, they'll remember that. You literally just need to apologize and say, I'm so sorry. I misunderstood your question. Because I don't know why that happens, but when you make them angry, they do remember that you made them angry 5 minutes later. And so it's like this thing you just may have to concede. Even though you didn't, you know, you can try to reason with them. I didn't. Did it? Stop. Just stop. And literally just say, I'm sorry.
There's a kind of a knowing smile from Barbara Smith here. You want to add to that, Barb?
Just absolutely.
You agree with that one?
Absolutely.
She's endorsing that one. Mimi, anything you want to add to this idea of how to navigate those kind of moments?
This comes up at the home quite a bit. People are looking for their mothers a lot. And I tell staff, if they don't ever remember anything else I ever taught them, please remember not to argue with folks about things, because it's just pointless. And to think instead about, why are they asking for what they want? So if they're looking for their mom, why do we look for our mom? Maybe we don't feel good, or we're scared, or there's some other kind of reason for it. Telling me my mom is dead is not going to make me feel better.
Yeah.
Instead, maybe just saying something like, I'm sorry I haven't seen your mom. Can I do something for you? Is everything okay? Let's go for a walk. Or and finding another way to try to find out what it is that they need.
Jolene, you know, you write that this progression of this particular disease does essentially make someone get younger in their minds. And so we shouldn't be surprised at that kind of development, right?
Correct. Yeah. And the key is if you can figure out what age they're living in their mind at this moment, because if they're looking for their husband, but when he walks in, they're like, you know, I'll be nice to him for about 10 minutes, but then he's got to go. Then you can assume they're like in their 20s. And in their 20s, they may have lived in Missouri and not in Rochester. So you've got to talk about Missouri, and you've got to talk about their grandparents instead of their grandkids. So when you can figure out what age they're living in their mind and where their memories are, we go there and we find something we didn't know before about this person.
Mm. We're talking to Jolene Bracke and a whole panel of folks. Jolene's book is Creating Moments of Joy Along the Alzheimer's Journey. The book's available now. The event coming up on November 7th. That's a Thursday. How to Find Joy in Caregiving. Jolene will be at St. John's here in Rochester. It's a free event, but they do ask you register in advance because space is going to be limited. It is open to local caregivers. A book discussion and a Q&A are happening. And Lifespan and St. John's are going to host a virtual book club. And a forum for professional caregivers on November 6th. All the information is going to be part of our show notes. If you'd like to attend, if you know someone who'd be suitable to attend one of these events, so we'll have it in our show notes wherever you find your podcasts of connections later today. Let me grab that phone call from Laura in Canandaigua on the phone. Hi, Laura. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan and guests. Thank you for this program. Mm-hmm. It's so important. I lost my husband to Alzheimer's 4 years ago. And all the points that your guests have brought up are so relevant to anyone that's caregiving or living with Alzheimer's. I found early on the most difficult thing for me was to not expect the same things from my husband, that he, the way he always was, the things that he always did. And it was hard to adjust to that change. But once I did, it was so much easier to live with him. And it was hard for him when he knew he was losing his memory. He would get very frustrated. But I planned a lot of social events for us. We went to concerts. We traveled. I knew he wouldn't remember them. But I also knew that when he would be gone, it would make it so much easier and nicer for me to have those memories. I have to tell you that the Alzheimer's Association was so helpful to us both, and I learned so much through them. Sorry, it's emotional to talk about
it's
them.
It's okay.
But your guests are right on in every single point, and I did learn to live in my husband's world. We went to a concert one time, and he started getting upset and asking for his wife. And I was like, okay, let's go home. I think she's there.
You're amazing. You are amazing.
But by the time we got home, he was okay. So.
Oh, Laura.
It was, and I also have to mention that I got so much great support from my friends and family. I have a big family. And they were so supportive in every way. And I have a brother-in-law who's so smart and said to me early on, make sure you ask your friends and your family for help. And that was really hard to do. But when I did, they were all happy to pitch in or to stay with my husband so I could get out. And it made a big difference. So to all the caregivers out there, ask for help to those people that love you because they want to help. And they will provide it for you, and it'll make it easier for you. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, Laura.
And thanks for this program.
Thank you. What a beautiful phone call. How fortunate your husband has been to have your love and your approach. That moment that you describe where he's looking for his wife, any human being would be justified in having a moment of going, hey, buddy, like I'm right here. And you had the loving understanding to say, no problem. I think she's at home. Awesome. Amazing. I mean, that's when you hear therapeutic fibbing, that's a phrase that most people don't know until you get into this world. There you go. I mean, you're going along with the world that he's in to offer that sense of comfort instead of trying to push back in a way that isn't going to work. Oh, Jolene, again, these are the stories I know you've heard so many since your book has come out, Jolene, but that's a powerful story.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's pretty rare when someone can adjust that quickly and you meet them along the way and then I learn.
Well, so let's talk then. Let me pivot this a little bit here. Part of what Laura was also talking about was looking for, events, sometimes concerts, music, things that would be enjoyable. Let me start with a very specific question, Jolene, and then we're going to talk more generally about how to create these moments of joy. But specifically about music, this is something that I've been reading and hearing about a lot over the years, that music has a powerful connection to memory. And do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I think listeners, may wonder, okay, if this is me in the future, does a concert help? Does seeing their favorite performer, their favorite orchestra, whatever, listening to a favorite song, does that make a difference? So what do you think, Jolene?
Absolutely. But again, it goes back to what age are they living in their mind. So if they're younger in their mind, you may want to go back to Sunday school songs. You don't want to play the church music that they're playing now with the band and whatnot, because that actually is causing confusion. It's too much. So it's taking it back to what music they grew up with. You know, going back to the early 1900s, those are the songs that I pretty much know every single song from their generation, because when we sang a song that they liked, we got to sing it 10 times in the next 10 minutes. But something as simple as You Are My Sunshine, it literally, they'll sing with you, hit the pitch, not miss a beat, harmonize, and it just brings this calm over the room. And everyone can participate in that, even if they're not singing. I don't know how else to say it. It's stronger than medication. It's stronger than medication.
Now, beyond just music here, there may be a desire to create these events, these moments, these holidays, and to sort of cram a lot in. And I just want to read a couple of notes from you, Jolene, and I want to give you some chance to kind of expound on this, and then we'll talk to our guests in studio. But especially when it comes to navigating big events, you write that big groups and lots of noise can be frightening or trigger different behaviors. So try to remember what is best for someone with Alzheimer's, not just you or your own needs.
Yeah.
You can spread holiday traditions out over time. It does not have to be all things in one day. Different things can happen in different days, whether it's sharing gifts or meals or things like that. And there's even this idea that I think is actually related of teaching people how to visit and what it means to be together and what people expect, especially around big events, parties, holidays, et cetera, which we are now fast approaching. Do you want to talk a little bit about why this idea of holidays and family reunions can be kind of fraught? I think that some people might think, well, this will be good. This will jog memory. They'll see people they recognize. This will be very helpful.
No. Nope. 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 So often families want them there because they should be there. It's important that mom's there. When she goes there and she has people coming up to her and say, do you remember the drive I took you on yesterday? What'd you have for lunch? Do you know who I am? We constantly ask them questions that require their short-term memory, and then they get scared, and then they say, I want to go home. And when they say, I want to go home, it literally means they can't handle all these people, this stimulation. They don't know why they're here. Even when they're at home and you have a family reunion at home, they say, I want to go home. It's just this cue that we have to be the ones to change our parties. We have to be the ones to go, I'm going to go visit mom, just me and mom. That's it. Because even when there's more than one person in the room, it gets confusing. And they also check out because they can't follow the conversation. The greatest way to be with someone is to have something in your hands and to give it to them. Because what we say, they may not understand a word coming out of our mouths, but what we put in their hands will trigger the memory. Or the music we sing together, the hymns we sing together, that will trigger a feeling and a moment in their memory. But so often we want to come in with words, right? What'd you do today? Remember the family reunion I took you this weekend? All of those things are just words that creates more confusion. And so maybe you bring in the picture that's been in your family house for a lifetime. You know, the one that you've kept over the years, or the statue, or there's something that has been carried on throughout the house. Bring that in, and I guarantee you they're gonna give you a memory about that. It's not what we say, it's what triggers their memory is what they touch, what they see, what they hold, what they smell, what they hear. That's what triggers their memory. And you've always got to visit with something to give them to trigger their memory.
Let me ask our guest in studio to elaborate on this. This is powerful. Mimi DeVinny is a dementia and quality of life specialist at St. John's. What do you think here?
Oh, I think having those things that you can have in your hands are always very helpful. Having an activity to do with people. Sometimes families start to think that their loved one can't do things anymore, or it doesn't matter anymore, or they won't remember anyway. It doesn't matter, but it really does. And then they're surprised when they come into the nursing home and they see their mom slicing strawberries or doing something, and they think, I didn't know she could still do that. But they weren't giving them the opportunity anymore. And so always having those things to fall back on, especially those things that we know that they enjoyed and are familiar to them, is a much better way to visit with somebody than to say, you know me today, Mom? Which one am I? Mm. Which is just not going to go well.
Yeah, that question, do you remember me? Not a good one. Not
Who
a
am
good
I?
One.
What's my name?
Oh, and I'm sure it's well-intended, by the way. My guess is I wouldn't be surprised if I've done it in my own life. Because you, first of all, you want to be remembered. Mm-hmm. And second of all, you want to establish where they are, but not all that, not recommended, Mimi.
No, it doesn't go well.
Yeah. Katie Allen, on the subject of parties and get-togethers and holidays that are coming here, what do you want to add?
I think Jolene is exactly right that large groups of people can be very overwhelming and overstimulating for someone with memory loss. I think, as you said, it's really about adjusting the things that you want to do to meet the needs of the person with the disease. And so it's rethinking about how those things go. Also honoring all the people that love that person, that want to see them and spend time with them, but figuring out, are there different ways to do that? I think one of the things that was talked about in book club recently was for out-of-town family and friends that say, well, what can I do? I'm not there. I can't help with a doctor appointment or grocery shopping or those things, is to ask them to send letters. Just send letters, postcards, or emails that you can print out and read to the person. And they can be about past memories with that person that might trigger some memories for the person with dementia. They can just be about what's going on in their life. And it's okay if the person with dementia says, now, who is that again? It really is just sharing moments in time and figuring out new ways to have things like Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and all of those celebrations, the things that we do as a family, and rethinking if this is overwhelming. Because as a caregiver, what we want is to make this the easiest and the best experience we can for that person that we are caring for, and as well as minimize our own stress. And I think the way to do that is to rethink and also be very flexible and willing to change. So if you go to someone's home, you always go for there for Thanksgiving, and it seems overwhelming, be okay with getting up and saying, we're going to go now. And, you know, having your sister pack up some Thanksgiving food to go and bringing it home with you. I think it's about really about flexibility and to be a caregiver automatically implies there are two people. There are two people in that relationship. And when you become a caregiver, your life, I think, often becomes all about taking care of that person. Doctor's appointments, medication, time to get up, time to get dressed. And I think it's really important as a caregiver that you remember the two people, and one of those people is yourself. And really remembering that we have to take care of ourselves in order to be ready for that long time journey of caregiving for someone else. It's putting on your own oxygen mask before you assist others, and remembering that there are two people, and being flexible around that.
Barbara Smith is a resident caregiver at Briarwood at St. John's, caring for her husband, Bill. How do you approach the holidays?
Well, the same things that people have all said already. Small groups are very important. My husband, if he goes to a larger group kind of thing, comes away really confused because he can't remember who people were. He can't even remember to tell me who was that man in the blue coat. Because he just doesn't remember, but he knows that he, you know, couldn't figure it out. So that's, like everybody has already said, that's not good. And family, I think it's the same kind of thing. Family wants to interact with the person, but they don't have the experiences, having been with that person for a while, to know what kinds of things they can understand and what kinds they can't. So they end up making mistakes, not blaming them, but just because they don't know. So that's hard. This question makes me think of our situation with church, which is the same kind of thing. Church was always important in both of our lives. And so now for church, we're doing it around his needs. We started going, and again, we'd come home with only questions and frustration. And so our church does do live stream, so we live stream. He loves singing the hymns. He loves looking at the people, and he identifies the person who's speaking, at least by face, maybe not by name. and I get to enjoy that too. And so that's another way of adapting for the two of us. I get to go to church. All right, I had to do it at home instead, but you make the change. And that's just one example.
Well, in our last few minutes here, let me just get a little bit more listener feedback in. There's so many layers and just short, powerful sections in the book, Creating Moments of Joy Along the Alzheimer's Journey by Jolene Bracke. Jolene, one of our guests this hour. Judy writes to us the following under the heading Frustrating. She says, my siblings and I are trying to control our frustration, caring for our 92-year-old mother who has dementia. We have contacted Lifespan and the Alzheimer's Association and are developing a care plan at this time. So far, Mom is fairly independent but needs her meds given to her daily. We make sure we go over at mealtimes to make sure that she eats. She doesn't want to eat. She's lost 30 pounds this past year. She goes to bed at 4:45 in the afternoon and complains that she can't fall asleep. It's very frustrating. The day will come when she needs more care and assistance, and we are starting to make that plan so that we're ready. I would encourage everyone to start plans for longer-term care sooner than later. I'm retired but unable to enjoy much of it as I have to care for mom every other day because that is the schedule my sister and I have. We go to her apartment every other day. We give her breakfast, give her meds, give her lunch, dinner, bedtime meds, help her get ready for bed. We take her for a walk or outside. We don't stay at her place all day. We go home and take care of ourselves, but we have to go back and forth to care for her. It's been 4 years and no end in sight. Just frustrating. And Judy said, you know, she apologizes. Her thoughts are over the place. And in some ways, she's already thinking or dreading that tomorrow is her day with her mom. And that's not anything that anybody wants to feel. So, Judy, I want to send you all the love that we can and say that I'm sorry that you're feeling that way. I'll start with Jolene. What do you make of this email?
I would give her permission to let somebody else caregive so she can be the daughter again. Because ultimately, her world is caregiving 24/7. And I've been there, done that. And if you do that number one in your life, you're going to lose yourself and your life. And that's not what this person that you're caring for wants for you. So we ultimately say, I am important too. I am important too. I need a weekend every week. I need to be done. We've got to give ourselves permission to be done, because if you wait and wait and wait, your love's going to turn to hate. And just being frank, we don't want it to come to that point, because they can sense how you feel about that. They can sense how you feel about being in the same room with them. They feel your frustration, and that's not benefiting at all. So it's this concept of you taking ownership of your life and saying, what do I need to fit joy into my day? Because I'm important too.
Barbara, you've said that you would encourage people to make a move sooner rather than later.
Yes, certainly.
So what would you say to Judy?
In this case, my move was to move to senior living, where there was still independence, but there were other things going on so that both he and I could participate in activities and gain socialization skills in doing that and so on. So that move happened early on in our journey, and I can't say enough about how glad I am that we did do that early. And we haven't gotten ready for the next step, which probably want that to come as early as possible also, but I'm trying to put that off for as long as possible as well. Let him do as much as he can for as long as he can.
Sure. Katie, what would you say to Judy, who sent the email?
Sure. Judy, thank you for sharing and your honesty. And I think just to reaffirm that what you are feeling is really, really, really normal and something that almost every caregiver feels, that frustration, resentment, guilt, all of those feelings come up, I think, for caregivers. I think to remember, you're not alone. I love that you're connected with Lifespan and the Alzheimer's Association. We are so fortunate in our community to have so many resources to help. The other thing I would say is that every Thursday, St. John's does have a free drop-in respite program. Every Tuesday, Lifespan has a free drop-in respite program. Please connect with us and learn about those programs. The Grease Baptist Church has a drop-in respite program every Wednesday. There are lots of options in our community for a person living with dementia to attend a program. It allows you to have some free time. And I don't know if your mom is appropriate for those, but please connect with us and find out. I'll also mention our memory cafes. Just quickly, you mentioned music. Every month in Monroe County, we have a memory cafe. The caregiver and the person living with dementia can attend together. We have music at almost every one of them, as well as a meal. They're short, they're 2 hours long, and they are amazing. You get to connect with other people walking a similar journey, and music has such an impact.
Mimi, what do you want to add there?
I think she's so right about looking ahead and seeing what's available so that she's not making decisions at the last minute in an emergency, because that's really hard. I do think that I've seen family members, once they finally made that decision to move their loved one into long-term care, have a sense of relief that it wasn't as bad as they thought it was going to be. You know, we're open 24/7. They can sleep now. They can go back to being the family member. And sometimes they've become so isolated, and their loved one has. Now they've got people around them again, and they can enjoy that and just kind of, you know, just enjoy some more time with their parents or their loved ones.
Well, the book is called Creating Moments of Joy Along the Alzheimer's Journey. The event coming up on November 7th, that is Thursday, How to Find Joy in Caregiving, Thursday, November 7th, a couple weeks from now. Jolene Brackey is coming to St. John's. They would love to see you there. It's free. They ask you to register in advance, and we will have information on how to do that as part of the show notes when the audio for this program is up on WXXINews.org. About 30 seconds, Jolene, what do you want to leave with listeners?
I would say create a sacred space for yourself. Create a space that the person that you're caring for can't come into. Create a space that has what you need in it in order to be okay. And then if you say to the person, I told you 10 times, know that you need to take a break. Know that you need to step out of the room. You need to go to your sacred space that supports you.
Thank you, Jolene, for sharing your time and the book with us. We appreciate that. We'll see you in Rochester in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good.
Jolene Brackey, the book is Creating Moments of Joy Along the Alzheimer's Journey. Barbara Smith, a resident caregiver at Briarwood at St. John's, thank you for telling your story. All the love to you and Bill. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And thank you to Mimi Davini, a dementia and quality of life specialist at St. John's. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Katie Allen, division leader of caregiver services at Lifespan. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And from all of us at Connections, thank you for listening wherever you are. We're back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.